Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Can you believe Caps hockey is almost back? Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. Congrats. You're going to win a pair of tickets to opening night for the Capitals a week from Wednesday. This is October 8th against the Boston Bruins. All fans in attendance are going to get a schedule magnet, and you're one of those fans. For tickets and the complete Capitals schedule, go to thefandc.com, courtesy of the Washington Capitals. We'll give these tickets away at 4 o'clock all week long, right here on The Fan. Ahead of our Beltway Blitz, we'll have a pair every single day. You want to rock your red, you want to get out to opening night, G&D going to help you do that.
When you think of number 10 for the Washington Capitals, is there a name that comes to mind for you?
Yeah.
Few number 10s.
You want it to be Brett Connolly, but it's not. It's Matt Bradley.
Matt Bradley. Kelly Miller is my answer. Just different eras there.
I thought you wanted me to give you Brett Connolly.
I didn't want it. Because Connolly did it for a short time,
did
and it was
fun. Did
you
want Matt Bradley?
I didn't. I wanted Kelly Miller. I just wanted to bring up Kelly Miller from the 80s and 90s. That's really the whole point of that.
It's time for the Beltway Blitz. We're going to cover everything that happened for the Commanders and the NFL in this segment. We got to start on the diamond. And I got to say, the final weekend of Nats baseball, and a pretty epic weekend at the park with Bob Carpenter saying, see you later. Kind of got the shaft a little bit this weekend with the Nats being so bad and the NFL being so dominant and playoff baseball relevant all over the country. So let's talk to Mark Zuckerman of MassinSports.com to see how everything unfolded. Let's start with the Bob farewell. I thought the Nats organizationally, from the top down to the players, everything was done so elegantly this weekend to say goodbye to a legend in the booth.
Yeah, I agree. It was really well done on all counts. And, just appropriate. I thought all of it was appropriate. If you guys haven't seen it yet, or listeners out there haven't seen it yet, you can find it online. The tribute video they put together, they got some big-time names who had worked with Bob in the past. And I'm talking Lee Corso, who worked with him on the original College Game Day. Bob was one of the hosts on that. They got Joe Buck. They got Ozzie Smith from his St. Louis connections. They got a bunch of big names to tape messages for him. Then you have the unveiling of his name under the broadcast booth that'll stay up there forever now. You had a great moment at the start of the game. They took the field, and before throwing the first pitch, they all paused, all the players. They came out of the dugout, and they looked up to the press box, tipped their caps to him. It really was a special weekend. And, knowing Bob as I've known him for 20 years, you could see how genuinely he was touched by it all, what this all meant for him. He didn't really know going into the year what this was going to be like, and I think it exceeded his expectations in all ways how this final season for him went, other than the performance on the field, obviously.
Yeah, I thought it was so first class. That was my favorite moment that you just referenced at the end there, Mark, was the players taking a second to do that. Right. It's one thing if, the media team that gets paid to do media stuff sort of behind the scenes puts together a montage and, that's all that stuff's nice. I'm not diminishing it. But when the players have that appreciation also, where those guys change and the guys that deliver the message to you on a nightly basis. And I thought Bob said it best in part of his farewell. You're part of the family almost, right? He's welcomed into our homes 100+ nights a year as we're watching it, whether it's active or passive or somewhere in between. It's like the most welcome house guest there is. I just thought it was fantastic. And just kind of your general thoughts on that. I mean, some of the great moments in Nationals history, some of the low moments, et cetera, but he's the constant and just kind of what that means for young baseball fans maybe in the area.
It's what separates baseball from all the other sports. Because there are 162 games and the overwhelming majority of them are on local TV and on radio, that you develop a bond with the broadcasters that you just don't get in the other sports. And that's not to knock anybody who does. I mean, I know everybody loves Joe B and Locker, and they're great, but it's only half the number of games. When you have 162 of them for 20 years, he is the voice, the soundtrack of the Washington Nationals, along with Charlie and Dave on the radio. And so, you know, I've been thinking it myself. I've heard other people say it. It's going to be strange not to hear his voice next year. Now, I know he was taking more games off, and Dan Colco had filled in a lot, and we'll see who gets the job on a permanent basis. But it's going to be strange to hear a different voice, because think of any prominent regular season moment over two decades. The Zimmerman walk-off, the Zimmerman no-hitter, the Scherzer no-hitters, 20-strikeout game, so many other moments, you think of Bob's voice on them all. And it's, you know, a power to him, a credit to him, but it also shows you how, no matter who it is, when you stick in it for that long, that's the voice that generations of people will always associate with what the Washington Nationals.
For our listeners who slacked a bit and didn't watch any of the Nats this weekend, tell them what they missed.
Well, Bob almost got to call a perfect game on the final day of his career.
Yeah, not for a Nats pitcher either, by the way.
Yeah. They got one hit. It was a Brady House opposite field single, and they had no other base runners yesterday against the Chicago White Sox, who had a worse record than the Nationals this year. They lost 2 out of 3. The good stuff, James Wood, I mean, he struck out 3 times yesterday, unfortunately, but he did hit his 31st homer. He looked better over the last week after a really tough second half. And Dalen Lyle played right through the finish line. A couple more home runs. He wound up tied with the Nats band in triples with 11. He put himself in the conversation. I'm not saying he's going to win it, but he put himself in the conversation for National League Rookie of the Year, which is an amazing thing considering I think he only played 95 games compared to some others who played a lot more than that. He was phenomenal. And while a lot of the team was limping to the finish line, Dalen Lyle played straight through it. And if it was up to him, he'd play another month. He doesn't want to have to go home now.
Why did James Wood struggle so mightily in the second half? I mean, so many people have tweeted me over the months, Mark, he should never do the home run derby again, and they've drawn that correlation. I don't know if it's an Abreu situation or something like that, but why do you think he struggled so mightily until the last couple of weeks of the year?
Well, I think he won't be accepting any invitations to the derby for many years to come. Whether that had anything to do with it or not, I'm sure in the back of his mind he worries about it. I think you saw a couple things. One, his swing, he opened up a lot, front shoulder open, front hip open, and he's no longer driving every ball to the opposite field, which is really where his natural swing was. So there are a lot of swings and misses from that. You saw a lot of takes. I mean, on fastballs over the plate, I think he looked a little lost, maybe overthinking up there. Am I looking for a breaking ball? Am I looking for a fastball? And got caught in between too often. And then physically and mentally, I just think he was worn down. Remember, he never had a day off last year when he played half the season, and right up until like a week before the All-Star break, I think this year, he finally got his first one. And I wonder if that all caught up with him. When you combine that with, you know, the midseason firings and that understanding that everybody had deep down that the second half this year was a lame duck session for everyone, and they're just playing out the string. And there were days, and he kind of admitted it there at the end, that physically and mentally he probably wasn't as into it as he could have been or should have been. So I think it's a huge lesson for him to work on physically keeping himself strong, mentally keeping himself in every single game, every single at-bat. And whoever ends up filling out the lineup cards next year, I would not be surprised if you see him get some more days off in the first half to try to avoid that wearing down, I think, that we saw from him this year.
Mark, at some point soon, we got to get you on for a little longer to talk Paul Toboni and then the managerial search and kind of a postmortem, bigger picture on where to head from here. But good insight on the weekend. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Toboni, thanks, by Mark. The way, will be introduced on Wednesday at Nationals Park, press conference set for 9 a.m. And you'll be able to hear that live in its complete. What word am I looking
entirety?
For? Entirety is
that's
what I'm
looking
for.
Yeah.
In its entirety, right here on The Fan, 9 a.m. with the Junkies. I was going to say in its completion. That's not the word I'm
that's
looking
not,
for.
Yeah.
Very commander secondary of me there. My apologies. Let's talk football. Nate Davis, who joins us from USA Today Sports to get things started. Let's bounce around the league. Nate, start with the Giants. I did not see this one coming. They get their first win after going to the rookie against a really good defense. Jackson Dart throws for just 111 and a touchdown, but he did run for 54 in his score. And the Giants, with Malik Nabers getting hurt early in the game, beat 3-0 LA. How'd it happen?
Well, you know, I think obviously the Chargers didn't have that much extensive of film to study Jackson Dart. You know, my understanding is they went back and watched some Ole Miss tape, but you know, not the same as watching him in Brian Daboll's system. But sort of the Chargers were also hurt by the fact they lost their left tackle Joe Alt, so they're down both their starting tackles right now, and that was definitely reflected in the way Justin Herbert got pressured yesterday and threw a couple picks, which is pretty uncharacteristic of him. So I think the Chargers they caught him at the right time in some ways. But also, I mean, the Giants have, you know, talent on that team, particularly on the defensive side. It's young talent. And I mean, I think this team has a chance to be pretty good year and a half from now. If Brian Daboll and Joe Shane can make it that far. But I think they caught the Chargers at the right time.
Nate, just more of a general question here before we get into some of the specifics. Why does it seem like the results are so topsy-turvy early in the year? Maybe we say this every year, and maybe I've kind of memory-holed it. But, you know, I'm just thinking of Green Bay looks like a juggernaut, then they lose to Cleveland. You know, all of a sudden, a couple weeks in a row, their defense can't do anything. Atlanta loses 30-0 and then, you know, look like one of the best offenses in the world against Washington the following week. It just feels like we have these wild fluctuations, especially early in the year. Why do you think that is?
I think there's something to that theory, Danny, that September is now basically the preseason. And that's why you kind of see some of the uneven results. I mean, let's take Atlanta, like you said. I mean, that's a good example. You know, Michael Penix, I think, has played in two preseason games in his career. I don't know that he played in any this year. If he did, it was one at most. But I mean, it's not like he's got a whole lot of starting experience there. And I think they're still largely working the kinks out with him. But I mean, Michael Penix aside, I just think you see so many guys who are important players for any teams that don't necessarily play a lot of football in August, and then they really haven't played a whole lot, you know, probably at a minimum of 8 or 9 months, and they're still kind of either, you know, getting their own sea legs under them or adapting to new teammates or whatever it might be. So I just think that this tends to be a month where a lot of teams are still working out the kinks, particularly with guys that they really haven't put between the lines all that much if they're trying to preserve their health in training camp and in the actual preseason.
Nate, what do you think of the Jags being 3-1 under their new head coach, Liam Cohen? Decent win on the road in San Francisco yesterday. I think they're the first team ever to start a season with a month straight of games with three or more takeaways, and they took the ball away four times. And after the game, Cohen's getting into it with Robert Saleh, yeah, based on Saleh questioning him taking signals legally. He said it wasn't illegal, but he questioned them getting signals. What did you make of that scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see a little bit more personality out of them coming from Liam Cohen. I mean, he's certainly been kind of a volatile personality already in a couple of games this year. And I think, you know, saw him barking at Trevor Lawrence in the Cincinnati loss. And I kind of wonder if that's something that's going to eventually wear thin. We'll see. But I think right now it's kind of injected a little bit of life and personality. But I think you hit on it. I think they've got 13 turnovers now through four games. I think they had nine maybe all of last year. Whatever the figure is, I think they've already generated more takeaways this year than they had all of last year. And man, I think they're also another team that, you know, they've gotten Travis Etienne back on track. I think he's like maybe entered the weekend third in yards from scrimmage. And I mean, he was coming off his worst year as a pro last year, aside from his rookie year when he was hurt. And they still haven't fully, you know, in my mind, leveraged Travis Hunter. I'm looking forward to kind of seeing them a week from now. They're going to be playing next Monday night hosting the Chiefs, and it's the first Monday night game the Jags have had in forever. But I do kind of retain a little skepticism whether they may be overpaid for Travis Hunter. And, you know, he deserves more time. We'll work it out. But you're not seeing him make a huge impact on offense. Had some nice catches yesterday. But you're not seeing him make a huge impact on defense either. And, you know, he had that pass interference against Cincinnati that basically cost him the game. So they are kind of a compelling team for many reasons, but I'll be interested to see, you know, if they can keep this going throughout the season.
Nate, the state of Pennsylvania is 7-1. Pittsburgh did it despite an 80-yard touchdown pass. I think Rodgers, when you combine it, is 17-for-21 for 120 yards in that game. Not much offense doing, and yet they won. And Philadelphia wins a game where they don't complete a pass in the second half, and yet there they are 4-0. How much of that is kind of, you know, smoke and mirrors for both teams?
Well, I mean, for the Steelers, they're adapting to a new guy. I mean, I think Aaron Rodgers is averaging something like less than 3 air yards per pass, or he was entering that game. And like you said, Danny, I mean, that pass to DK Metcalf was 10 yards downfield, yep, and then DK did the rest of the work. But I mean, they do want that to be like a blocking heavy, you know, two, three tight end system. And that's kind of what they want to be, I think. And don't want to put all the emphasis on Aaron Rodgers. So I'm curious to see kind of how it unfolds. And I mean, I think the mistake the Jets made with him last year is they put too much on his plate. So, I kind of credit the Steelers for limiting what they're asking of Aaron Rodgers right now. But I do wonder, like, maybe before the trade deadline, if they need one more weapon there. As for the Eagles, you know, I've seen them a couple of times in person. I mean, they're winning their games. I mean, it hasn't all come together, but I mean, the thing you got to credit about the Eagles is they do what they need to do to win. And it's been all phases, just even the last couple of weeks between the block kicks and, you know, one week Jalen Hurts is throwing the ball all over the yard. And the next week they're doing, you know, alterations of tush push and making that work and beating, you know, I think by most counts with a solid team in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I'm less worried about them. And, you know, I think there's also something to be said for not peaking too early, but still being 4-0.
Nate, always excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
See you, buddy.
Be good. Let's talk to Nick Ackridge about the Commanders. Covers a team for PFF. Nick, wanted to ask you, as I always do after these games, who'd you guys really like and who didn't you? Who were the highest and lowest graded players on the team this week?
Yeah, it'll come to nobody's surprise that it was all offense. The top five was Marcus Mariota, 90.4, Laremy Tunsil, 80.8, Jalen Lane, 76.9, Debo Samuel, 76.1, and then Bill Kroski Merritt, 73.8.
Why is everybody so open against them?
There's a lot of answers to that one. So, like, it comes down to with this defense, you know, they don't have a, you know, their dominant pass rush. You know, you think of the Cowboys defense with Dan Quinn and Joe Witt. They had Micah Parsons. They were able to rush with four, get pressure. They don't have that here. So what they're required to kind of do is rush with five guys, blitz linebackers, get creative with how they have to generate pressure. That's why you see guys like Dorrance Armstrong get these high pressure numbers. But the grade on our end isn't as high as you would expect because, again, it comes from a lot of blitzes. It comes from stunts and stuff like that. That also then puts a lot of pressure on the back end in the secondary where they're asking guys to play a lot of man coverage. And there's just a lot of open field because of it. So when you can't get pressure against some of these teams that have better offensive linemen, better quarterback, and that's just kind of where it comes down to, basically.
What did you think of the young receivers without Noah Brown or Terry McLaurin in this game? It meant more of Luke, meant more of Jalen Lane, who you referenced having a really good PFF grade. And then even Tay Martin got in and got a catch on his only target.
Yeah, no, I thought they were really good. I really like to see Jalen Lane there. The stats might not look too great, but he did have a big 32-yard catch that was called back for a hold. Like you said, Luke McCaffrey, I've always been a big Luke McCaffrey guy. I just think he needed more opportunities there, and you're kind of seeing it very, very slowly sort of kind of work out for them. Yeah, I think really with this offense, there's very little problems. I think there's obviously some problems along the offensive line, but you've kind of seen Mariota step in and just put up points and play really, really well. And I think, you know, when Jaden comes back, I don't see this team missing a beat, and it should be even better.
Why don't they give Jacory Kroski Merritt the ball more?
Yeah, I think it's kind of tough because I think he is their most electric runner, best with the ball in his hands, but he really did still kind of struggling in pass protection. He was only out there for a couple times and he had a pass pro and it was just not great. That's kind of what you typically see from rookie running backs, especially for someone who really, he didn't even play at all last year. So for him to kind of step up and try to learn NFL protections, it's been a bit rough at times. So that's kind of the big thing there, but man, when he gets the ball in his hand, it's really fun to watch.
What's your initial feel on the matchup with the Chargers? I know we're 6 days away, but now they've lost their other all-pro caliber tackle. It's a lot of Quentin Johnston in the air, and you know, passing game otherwise kind of funneled through him has cooled off a bit here over the last game and change. What do you see?
Yeah, I think it could be. I think it could be a good kind of bounce back game for this defense, like you kind of said. But their offensive line is struggling right now with some injuries. They're possibly their two top tackles being gone. So I think this is a chance where, again, you can see some of that, those blitzes and that generated pressure really kind of get to Herbert. And hopefully this is kind of one that gets the defense kind of going again. So that's kind of where I'm leaning towards. I think they can have a much better performance on defense.
Back to the secondary again, Nick, that's where my focus is on pretty much today. What changes can they make? There aren't really any levers they can pull here, right? I mean, maybe you play Noah Igbinoghu a little bit more, but I don't know what else you do.
Yeah, it's tough. I've been trying to figure out what they do here, but this is kind of the problem you've had when you kind of, you know, you have to try to go all in on this secondary. I mean, I think Trey Amos has done a pretty good job there. It's been a rough year for Sanders still in the slot, and even when he has played outside, it's been up and down for Lattimore. I think he's gotten a little bit more stick than he probably deserves, but it still hasn't been great. So it's tough. It's really, really tough. When you just don't get pressure with that front four or when they're blitzing five or six, and then you just kind of have to hope these guys can hold up for long enough.
Nick, thank you, bud. We appreciate you.
Yep. You guys have a good one.
Check out his work at PFF covering the Commanders. Kind enough to hop on the Beltway Blitz. All right, next, I want to talk about the offense because we have spent the entire show so far discussing, bashing, whichever descriptive word you want to use, the defense. Did they do enough on offense to win? How did we feel about a Mariota-led group yesterday? That's next on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Down 31-16. Fourth down. Mariota looking for it all. End zone. Touchdown. Deebo Samuel with the silencer.
Caw-caw. Caw-caw. That's the Birdman, Ian Eagle, on the call. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. 34-27, Falcons over the Commanders. That was the throw of the day for Marcus Mariota. That touchdown pass to Deebo, that was a dime.
Great shot right there.
Dropped into the bucket, 24 yards. Little house call there in the end zone for a 6-catch, 72-yard, one-score day for Deebo Samuel. But that was also the drive where they answered the bell after the bad Mariota interception, which was far and away his worst throw of the game. I thought, by and large, Danny, and at first I'm going to grade this on a backup curve, I thought, considering he's a QB2 on the road as a backup, I thought he was actually good in the game. Like, very solid. The PFF grade of 90 is what it is. But I went back and I looked at every single throw today. And I counted 3 bad throws and maybe 4 where he would have liked to have done something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Out of 27 dropbacks for a backup, I think that's pretty damn good. Now, the pick, that one's tough. It's his only interception he's thrown in 92 pass attempts, by the way, as the quarterback of this team dating back to last year. But that one was bad, and he probably should have had a second pick. Would have taken an incredibly athletic play, but remember the linebacker going up the ladder to had the ball in his hand, like a one-handed grab?
That was a great play.
Because awesome.
The ball was accurately thrown, too. I think it was Ertz coming across, right?
Yep.
In that kind of middle crosser, yeah.
You got to wait an extra beat. I don't think he was under a whole lot of duress. Let him clear the linebacker and just drop that in for a nice gain. But he threw it a little early, and it almost got picked. But it was 2 balls in harm's way with an interception, and then he missed Ertz. This is like a random play people may not remember, but it was a 3rd down play. They're going right to left across your TV screen. Like a 3rd and 7 or 3rd and 8. Ertz runs an out route, and he sails it on him to the sideline. And they have to bring in Gay to kick a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of the 3 where I go, those are your bad balls of the game. But you told me before the game he was going to play at the level he did, I'd say.
Yeah.
Get a win. Go, you're going to score 27 points? You know, he's going to throw a couple touchdown passes. He's going to come back from his pick the way he did in the fourth quarter. Enjoy your victory. That's how I would have felt.
Yeah, to expect too much more, I think, might be a little irresponsible, but we've gotten more at times, right? We think of the Carolina game against a bad opponent, or, you know, when he's coming in relief and he's played well. I thought last week he was, you know, quote unquote, better than this. But again, on the road against a capable defense that's been pretty good against the run this year, you know, this is kind of what we signed up for, right? Before the game, I think it was either Thursday or Friday last week. Actually, I think it was Thursday. Which side of the ball do you feel better about coming into this game?
We did that at Sharp Bar on Friday.
It was a Friday. There you go. And it was the offense, because I thought we would get exactly this, right? You're going to be limited. There's going to be a couple third downs you don't pick up, or you punt maybe more than you want. And they got a short field for the first time in 2,000 years. Can only manage a field goal out of it. That's kind of a bummer. But again, this is kind of what you're working with. Without Jaden Daniels, the miracle worker, you don't have Terry McLaurin. You don't have Noah Brown. You're missing a whole bunch already. No Austin Eckler for easy buttons. Your three of your four best offensive players, in terms of skill guys, aren't in the lineup anymore, aren't available to you. To get that outing out of Mariota, I would take that, sign and scene.
1,000% agree with you, and I'll be curious to ask Jay Gruden about this when he joins us coming up in 25 minutes for his Monday breakdown of the game, having studied the film at 5 o'clock. How did he think Mariota played? But yeah, we have to add into the equation here that there was no McLaurin, that there was no Noah Brown, that there was no John Bates, that you've swapped out both guards. You know, there's just a lot of flux and a lot of injury issues on the offensive side of the ball. And it is still, I thought, was a day where he played well enough for you to win, throwing the ball to McCaffrey and Jalen Lane and Tay Martin, whoever that is, you know, off the practice squad, and Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt out of the backfield, which, by the way, he made a couple nice catches.
Mm-hmm.
That was good to see.
Yes, it was.
I mean, two legit decent catches from him. So maybe the pass pro thing isn't where it needs to be, but I feel better about the receiving part of it for sure. You're chucking the ball downfield on your vertical shots to Chris Moore yesterday. Like, that's where you're at as a quarterback. So I'm gonna give you a little grace on the performance, but I would say on a like non-backup scale, I'm going to give him a B- for the game. If you want to tell me it's a C+, I'm perfectly fine with that too. But I think anything less than a C+, like an average quarterbacking performance, I think is probably a little bit harsh.
Had this been Jaden Daniels, I'd go, yeah, it just wasn't much dynamic yesterday. Kind of bummed about that. This is Marcus Mariota, the backup, right, who you're trying to get away with.
And here's my gripe from yesterday. Uh-huh. What'd you think about this? Why didn't he run more?
This is what I was going to bring up. So I don't know. Against Green Bay, when Daniels didn't run, everyone's like, why aren't he taking off? And it's basically they had that flat four speedy linebacker/safety zone just taking away all the passing opportunities and all the running opportunities too.
Spying him with the fastest linebacking group in the league is a good way to keep him in the pocket.
That's how you try to do it. And again, their pass rush is electric and fast too with Micah Parsons. So I don't know what Atlanta was doing. So someone who breaks down the all 22 could tell me exactly, but I wonder if some of those avenues weren't there. But there were a couple times it felt like he could have gotten four or five to stay ahead of the sticks instead of an incompletion or instead of a sack. Or it seemed like he was really determined to stay in the pocket.
I agree.
And again, I don't know if you say Atlanta did a great job of that,
but
or if it was a him thing.
Design run. Where were the read option calls? Well, where were like the naked stuff?
Well, they had a few that looked like he could have kept them.
There were a couple RPOs.
On RPOs that he could have kept, right?
Of them they called an ineligible guy downfield. I don't know if the two-point conversion play was a true run-pass option, or if it was designed for the look they got where Ertz catches the pass, which, by the way, was a beautiful play design.
That was gorgeous.
But again, I thought Cliff did a really good job. I'm just so impressed by him week in and week out. I could not have been more wrong about him before he came here. I think Kingsbury's a stud. He's legit. And if there's a gripe right now, it would be maybe, especially without Daniels the last 2 weeks and Mariota in there, that they didn't run the ball enough in these close games. But you know, specific to yesterday, I want to see more Kroski-Merritt. Rodriguez was running hard, though. It's hard to get that upset that they didn't give Bill more carries when Rodriguez averages 8 a pop because he ripped off a 48-yarder. Now, if that's Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, is it 48 or is it 60 or is it a touchdown? I'm not really sure. I don't know what that looks like. But I know that I want to see more Kroski-Merritt. I'm not one of these guys. If you listen to the show longer than 3 minutes, you know I'm not a run-the-dang-ball guy. Never will be. I think you throw to set up the run in this league. And I think a lot of times, you know, throwing the football in early downs is the way to go. But when you're averaging 6 on the season like JCM is, when you're running the ball as effectively as they are, they're doing a great job moving people up front. Chris Paul's been a revelation at guard. He's a big pile-moving physical dude. I'm a little bit surprised that they're not getting more out of the running game. And that might even be Mariota with his legs, too. Like, I just thought in general, from a running back standpoint, they had three carries on the edge stuff with Deebo Samuel, if you want to throw him into the mix. It's 19 carries yesterday. And you're ripping them off with Rodriguez and Kroski Merritt. I'm just surprised it wouldn't have been a few more. But a big part of that, too, is I'll speak out of both sides of my mouth. They just didn't run a lot of plays. They got over 50 plays at the very end of the football game.
Yep.
Time of possession until the final few minutes was so lopsided, almost 2-1. It ended up 10 minutes in the negative, but that's part of it. There just weren't a lot of runs, so nobody's going to have a whole lot of opportunities.
Yeah, again, and also a lot of it is the way the game is going, too. So you heard in the highlight coming in from break, they were down 31-16. So there's not a ton of time in there to establish the run or whatever.
That was with 10 seconds left in the third quarter. You still have three quarters of pretty even football where, at worst, it was 24-13 when you get the ball back.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, you're down two scores and using the full 40 and, quote-unquote, establishing it. I'm with you.
But you think if you're down 24-13 with 10 minutes to play in the third quarter, you should go away from, like, your plan? I don't know.
I think you're running it for
seven a pop?
I think you're running out of time to be diligent. I guess what I mean is
you're one drive away from being down by 4 points in the third quarter,
and you haven't stopped them once. And you're now down to a couple possessions after you relinquish the ball in the third quarter. You only have a couple of sort of real time possessions left. So I understand.
But you're also ultra effective. We're arguing as if they were like
that's
they're
so
trying to establish the run. They're averaging like 7 yards per carry.
Yeah.
And not doing it. By the way, they got the ball back. To my point on that 11 play 76 yard drive, where they were down by 15 in the fourth quarter. You know what they did on that drive? They kept handing it to Bill. Down by 15 in the fourth quarter, and they go right down the field, 76 yards, and score the touchdown. And that's where they pulled to within 7 with like 8.5 to play. The other thing is it keeps the Falcons offense off the field, in theory. But regardless, it's semantics of kind of how they put it together. I guess my larger point is I thought they were plenty good enough on offense. They ran the ball effectively. They made a couple of explosive plays. 24-yard touchdown to Deebo, 16-yard chunk middle of the field to McCaffrey. Ertz had a big 14-yard catch and run. You know, they had some of the comeback stuff for 10-plus to Lane and Martin. When you score 27 on the road and you average about 6 per play, that's got to be a win. And with all those injuries, I think that's a job well done by Cliff Kingsbury.
Agreed. I mean, that's all you can ask to me. Now, if you had the full complement, minus Jaden Daniels, I would have loved to have seen it. And I might have come away disappointed if you had... Just for the sake of argument, if you still had Eckler and McLaurin, who had actually gone to training camp and had more than 2 practices before the season started and didn't hold in before signing a team-friendly deal, or Noah Brown, or everybody else, and you'd come up with that, I might have been a little bit more irritated. But again, given that in crunch time and gotta have it moments, it's Chris Moore. I don't know what's supposed to happen. It's adorable to yell next man up, but there's a reason certain guys make $30 million. You know what I mean? Like. So, yeah, I think given what they had yesterday, that is as well schemed up and well designed and as productive as you probably could have been against the Atlanta Falcons.
Jaden Daniels is likely going to play against the Chargers. We will get you the audio of Ian Rappaport saying as much this weekend and let you know what Dan Quinn had to say today. You're going to hear from Quinn at 6 o'clock here on The Fan today on Grant and Danny. And coming up in 20 minutes, Jay Gruden, former head coach in town, his thoughts after watching the film. Right here on G&D.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We are taking you up to 6:30. 5 o'clock, Jay Gruden, former head coach here in the nation's capital. And at 6 o'clock, we will get you Don't Forget About, and you will hear from the head coach of the Washington Commanders, Dan Quinn. Commanders fall to 2-2 through four games, and they've got some defensive issues after giving up 34 to the Falcons. Here's the good news. That dynamic offense of a year ago is going to be closer to whole this weekend. All signs point toward Jaden Daniels returning to the field. Now, again, Mariota, really good last week, fine this week, not the reason they lost, could have gone 2-0 based on his performances, but you just lack some dynamicism and some of the potency and the lethal playmaking ability without Daniels. Is he going to be 100% right away in terms of performance? I don't know. Is he going to come back and be able to run all over the place? I would think by holding him out that extra week, he's going to be really close to the guy that we've seen in the past. I'll bet you he's more compromised at times playing with that broken rib, getting treatment between every drive, than he's going to be coming back with this knee this year. And they handled it better, I think, this time, to be completely honest with you.
And understandably, because the difference in the two injuries, one's a pain tolerance thing, the other is a simply unable to go type thing. But I'm with you. I don't know. I just haven't seen the deposits this year. I haven't seen benefit of the doubt this year. Again, the first-team offense, including Daniels and McLaurin, got two practices together. They haven't found it yet. They haven't gotten there yet. So I'm hoping that it happens. And I felt like, and I said this after the Green Bay game, where they were just shoved on for the 99% of it. Better offensive football is coming for them. And I still think it is, by the way. I mean, they've been pretty decent as an offense, even with the Green Bay game, counting their stats, and even with a lot of things left on the field against the Giants. They're still top 10 in points scored, top 10 in yardage, and you know, all the good yards per play metrics and things like that. And they have not clicked yet. I don't think anybody would say they have.
They're the number 7 offense in the NFL, yards per play, and they're number 2 running the football. Now, interestingly, they're 20th throwing the football, but they average 5.9 yards per carry right now. And as I mentioned, since 1954, I think it was, they haven't had back-to-back games with 45-yard home runs hit in the running game like they did the last 2 weeks. And now you've got three guys that have 40-plus yard carries. McNichols, 60, Rodriguez, almost 50, and Bill, 42. All three of your running backs. So that they wanted to get more explosive. I would say that worked. Their plan at running back has absolutely worked.
Fair. You're right. And it's not something you thought when you go, okay, you know, it's more McNichols, it's more Chris Rodriguez. Merritt, you thought, might be able to do that a time or two, but you're right. It has worked. It has complemented their system and scheme. And the fact that I think the quarterback is a running threat for both, Daniels and Mariota, I think has helped that a little bit, even though I wish Mariota had kept it a couple times yesterday to keep everybody honest.
I'm just a little bit surprised without Daniels in one of these games, probably in the Atlanta game, honestly, yesterday. And this is not how I would call it. I'm just telling you what I'm surprised. They didn't come out and run it like 30 times. Just because they haven't been stopped yet. They've been that good. Mm. And you have three guys that you trust. Where someone gets tired, you can give it to the next guy. It's Oregon all over again. Just go read option and mesh point stuff and let Mariota, who's so good at it, like rip the ball out or hand the ball off and make those decisions. I mean, if you look at their tailbacks to this point right now, Deebo Samuel, as a receiver, has carried the ball a handful of times. He's averaging 6.5 per. Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt is averaging 5.9 per carry. Chris Rodriguez is averaging 5.4 per carry. And then McNichols just hasn't gotten enough carries. It's only 10, but because he had the long one, it's 10.5 per 106 yards because he had one from 60. Otherwise, he'd be down around 4.5 or so yards per carry. But all three of them have been cooking. But you're going to get Daniels back, and his threat in the running game can only help. This was Ian Rappaport yesterday before kickoff of the games, dropping the little nugget. They like to work this in while no one's paying attention because it's about next week. But this was pretty telling.
My understanding, though, is that Jaden Daniels is expected to be back next week in what looms is a huge game against the Chargers. Remember, Jaden Daniels still dealing with that knee sprain. This could be the second game that he has missed, but he did work out yesterday on Saturday. Sounds like the workout went really well, coming on the heels of a scheduled rest day on Friday. If all goes well, and they do expect it to, Jaden Daniels likely only misses 2 games for the Commanders. All in all, a decent outcome when it comes to your starting quarterback.
By the way, if there was a scheduled off day on Friday the whole week, then they knew the entire week he wasn't going to play. So you kind of tip your cap again to them for keeping it close to the
chest.
For
doing the charade,
and Jaden gets an Oscar from his presser. I mean, we had beat reporters coming on after he was in the press conference, as confident as he was that he's okay, saying they thought maybe he was going to play based on his answers. But right, he said there was a scheduled day of rest on Friday. So they had already laid the plan out.
It doesn't sound like what you do, right?
If he's ramping up and you need to see more of him, like they knew throughout the week what the plan was probably. This was Dan Quinn today on Jaden Daniels and the possibility of playing Saturday.
Jaden, he had a strong workout here Saturday, and we'll take today and tomorrow and work out his practice plan. We'll go through the whole process with him this week, medically, how he feels, how he practices, and give you the updates Wednesday as I know him.
It is wild how, like, even today, the secret's out, man. NFL Network, a media partner, they kind of let us know yesterday. All the tea leaves are being read. We saw him running around looking fairly normal last week. 6 days away, and he still can't say, yeah, things look good for Sunday against the Chargers. He's just not willing to do it.
He's too disciplined, man. He's too committed to the craft, and God bless you. It's like, remember, you ever seen the movie The Prestige? Christopher Nolan movie with Christian Bale and company? So, like, remember the whole analogy about that one dude who the magic trick, the old man who was like super duper strong and he never broke the illusion? That's Dan Quinn. He's the old man who never breaks the illusion.
He does not break kayfabe.
Where Michael Kane's go, you say that's a magic trick. You never break the illusion. That was it.
Former head coach Jay Gruden had to tell a fib or two at the podium once or twice, I bet, about a player's injury status. He joins us next live on Grant and Danny.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.